Morning, Austin Oaks.
Morning.
You like my suit?
Yeah,
yeah, I'm wearing my my lawyer suit because I got to eat lunch with a couple of engineers later, so. It's Easter, blessing. So humor is not politically correct often, right? But it's often instructive. So there's this TV faith healer, and he's really whipping up the crowd one night. He's got them excited. He got them going. And they are excited because he says, we're going to have a healing. We are going to see it. And he's getting the crowd stirred, and he goes down to a man, and he says, so do you want to be healed? He called him forward in the line. He said, you want to be healed? And he says, yes, sir, I do. And he said, you have a little speech impediment? He said, yes, sir, that's it. He said, God's going to heal you. Get behind that screen. So he did. Another man on crutches. What's your name? My name's Bill. And you need to be healed to walk. He said, absolutely. He said, get up behind that screen. We're going to have it happen. And he stirred up the crowd and he got them excited. They're coming in the aisles. We're going to see a healing. They're coming forward. We're going to see a healing. He yells out. He says, Bill, throw out that first crutch. And shoo. Middle of the stage. Bill, throw out that second crutch. Shoo. Middle of the stage. Harold, the guy's name, say something. And Harold said, Bill just fell down. So on the way up, Jody and I talked about this. This is not one of her favorite jokes. But we kind of worked it out. She thought it was trying to make humor out of speech and crutches, and it wasn't. It's getting on to faith healers. You know, picking my battles, right? Look, I'm not mad about any of that, but it does get us to the point of why so many people can be skeptical about things in Christianity and why skepticism is part of the conversation. Look, today we're talking about the Christ. Last week, Jesus. This week, the Christ. Makes sense. Resurrection, right? The Christ. This person who not only claimed but was understood and accepted being God. We often don't handle this right. We often, remember Howard Hendricks teaching us in school that what we tend to do is we'll do things like in an ABF or Sunday school or a home group or something. After a few weeks, somebody occasionally might blurt out something like, hey, wait, you don't mean to say Jesus is God, do you? And what do? Where did that sad banana guy come from? You know, what's wrong with him? Ooh. Can y'all cut that out? I don't think that worked right. He said, you know what we should be doing? We ought to say, now there's a man coming to grip with the issue. Make a hero out of them. And that's what I kind of aim to do today. Today is a... Well, in my first church, one time I preached how we ought to have a sign that says, sinners only welcome, right? Like, kind of like I could join this group. Sinners only welcome, right? I want one that says, and somebody got it made and we put it up in the church, had it for years, decades. And I want one that says, skeptics only welcome. I love skeptics. I think that is the path. Christianity can withstand your skepticism. It's done it over and over and over again. Many religions won't let you even question things, not us. This is Resurrection Day. This is an incredible thing that there's an empty tomb. And if you know anything about anything, you know that the media likes to expose problems and dig up things and throw them out there and absolutely have a field day at crushing things. Can you imagine in that day they said, look, he's resurrected, he's not in the tomb. All they have to do is pop the body out there and it's over. Game, set, match, can't find it. Worse yet, these 12 and many more, millions, have gone to the extent of dying for this. It's called being martyred. All 12 got martyred, except of course, John, he got boiled in oil, got it easy and then was on an island, but this martyring, destruction, something happened that 2,000 years ago, we would understand this. I personally had an empty life. And because Jesus emptied the tomb, I've had a full life ever since I encountered him. But it came through some skepticism. It came through some struggle. And what I'd like to do is invite you today to think with me, because we're in a battle of the ages. I just read 90,000 people per year since 2005 have been martyred, killed because they're Christians. I see a gas attack and 100 people get killed and we launch missiles. I'm not in a debate about that. I'm saying that's a bad deal. But I'm saying, what about the 90,000 believers in Jesus Christ because they've showed up and said, I love him, are the ones taken? This is a serious type game, but it's serious because it has eternal impact. I am incredibly grateful for you to be here. Look, I know you could have gone lots of places. You may be planning to. You might be church hopping today. I don't know. But you came and you got here and you listened to incredible music and you've showed up and you're going to give me a few moments to say a few things. And I respect that. I respect that you may have showed up a little bit, you know, under duress, but they promised you a good meal afterwards. So you're kind of here for the family, right? I get that. If you'd let me, my name is Fred Ray Librand. It comes up to be important in a moment. And if you'd allow me, I'd like to share with you maybe why you ought to listen to me for a second. It works like this. Easter is one of my least favorite days over my lifetime, okay? For several reasons. One is I usually have to work. Number two, it doesn't get much more honest than that, does it? Number two, I, you know, growing up, it was always a crisis the week before we're going shopping with mother, and shopping with mother always ended in me getting spanked. I have no idea why. What is that? And then wearing those clothes, they were stiff and knee-high socks and this and that. People are laughing and saying you're cute, and not the right people I wanted saying either of those things. And then came 13, where I got confirmed in our church. Confirmation, you go through classes and study about things you probably should believe if you want to be one of us. In our church, though, it was kind of like what's a few sins among friends. You know, it wasn't a big deal, but still going to go through it. And then they baptize you. And, you know, baptism was a big deal for us. And the baptism was kind of a hybrid pour sprinkle, you know, type thing on your head. I thought about, you know, when they did it and put it on my head at 13 saying, it burns, but I thought that would be really bad form, you know, kind of freak everybody out. So I didn't do that. That was his shot to smoke me right then, so apparently I'm okay. So I'm getting baptized. I've gone through the classes. I'm there kneeling. He's going to put water on my head, a whole row of kids around 13, you know, ish. And we have little place cards. And my place card says on it, I see it because I can read upside down. It says, Fred Roy Librand. I'm Fred Ray. That's Southern, you know. Roy, that's like West somewhere. I'm fixing to be baptized, go through, as far as I know, all eternity with the wrong name, Fred Roy Librand. So I ask God, dear Lord, please, if there is a God in heaven, please don't let me be baptized Fred Roy Librand. Let him remember, let something happen. God, do something. And you should really give God more detail, okay? The minister puts his hand, puts the water, it's dripping down, and he declares, I baptize you Fraud Ray Librand. Got a dyslexic minister. Measure of trauma in my life. Last time I remember being in church with my dad, he took a corsage pin that was like in his suit, and he was poking himself in the leg to stay awake. That's my memory of family and church and Christianity. Now you know why I try to include a little humor. Partly because it's funny, but partly because I want to engage you, and I'm no good at crying. What would it take for you to believe? If you're a skeptic, if you wrestle, I mean, you know, you may believe, but there are more things to believe, so there's a skeptic list there. But, you know, I know some of you, for an absolute drop-dead fact, have showed up here, and everybody may think you're cool, or maybe they think you're the, you know, the local skeptic. I don't know what they think. But somewhere in there, you have a list of, if you could get these things answered, that would do it for you. You know what I'm talking about? What is that list? Because in the Bible, there's someone that had a list, and I want to show it to you really quickly. If you make your way to John 20, if you have a Bible, if not, it'll probably appear magically up there. And in John chapter 20, just for context, verse 30, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples. This is the purpose of this book, it's basically telling us, which are not written in this book, but these are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name. So this thing is about believing, and he is the Christ, the anointed one. Hebrew would be the Messiah. He's the one prophesied. I've seen things up to about 800 nuanced kinds of prophecies related that he fulfilled in his lifetime. It's incredible, incredible human being who even among my most skeptical friends would say one of them just elevated him a little ahead of Socrates as his favorite philosopher. Cool. This is Thomas, verse 24. We call him Doubting Thomas. You heard this phrase, you know this thing, a Doubting Thomas? This is it. This is where it comes from. Now, Thomas was one of the 12 called the twin, and was not with them when Jesus came. So this is after the resurrection, empty tomb, right? They've seen him. Thomas wasn't with him. And Thomas, I really don't see him as a doubter the way it's pitched, and I get that. I think he's more a lawyer engineer. In a good way. I want to figure this out. I want a case. I want to make sense of this thing. I really actually respect that part of him. Look what he says. Thomas, the twin, not with them. Verse 22. So the other disciples told him, "We've seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see in his hands the mark of the nails, and place my finger into the mark of the nails, and place my hand into his side," where sort of stuck, right? "I will never believe." So he's out there very clear. There are three clear things I wish to understand or experience. One, two, three. You got it? That's Thomas. 8 days later, verse 26. His disciples were inside again, and Thomas was with them. Although the doors were locked, Jesus came in and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." I'm figuring you got to say something like, you know, boo, after you walk through a wall would freak everybody out. So, peace be with you, you know, calm, just walking through a wall, it's not a big deal. And then he said to Thomas, apparently he'd gotten wind of this in the cosmos, you know, "Put your finger here and see my hands. And put out your hand and place it on my side. Do not disbelieve, but believe." So he's sitting here giving Thomas this opportunity. And you know what's amazing to me as I look at this? Thomas, his list really wasn't his list because he doesn't do any of them. Thomas answered, "My Lord and my God." So this Thomas suddenly in that moment says, "My master and my God," probably goes back to the Hebrew, the Shema, this hero Israel, right? Our the Lord is God, Lord is one. This call to worship early, the call to worship in the evening as well. And he's hearkening back to that, identifying Jesus Christ as both God and man. And in that moment, when his faith awakens, Jesus says to him, "Have you believed because you've seen me?" Doesn't say touch me. "Have you seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." There's a thing with God, and it's kind of crazy. that God can actually be impressed with human beings, can be amazed. There are two references in the Bible where it talks about Jesus Christ, this God-man marveling. He had an experience with human beings, and he looked at what they did, and in both cases, they marveled. The first is in Matthew chapter 8. It's a centurion. He's like an officer, Gentile, and he has troops under him, under his command. And he has a servant that's sick, and he says to Christ, he said, "Would you heal my servant?" And Jesus says, "Sure," and kind of starts out. And the centurion says, No, I'm sorry. I'm a man under authority. I get how this works. When I give a command, then they go and give the command, and they get it done. If you just say it, it'll happen. And it says there in Matthew 8:10, he marveled. He marveled. And then declared, "I've not seen this kind of faith in all of Israel." Jesus Christ marveling. The other is in Mark chapter 6. And in Mark chapter 6, he's in Nazareth, his hometown, right? And this is where he declares a prophet is never welcomed in his own town. He only could feel a few people. And it says there, he marveled at their lack of faith. They didn't believe it. There's this incredible thing that God, through Jesus Christ, has done and set up, and that is for us to gain into relationship and entry and forgiveness and all this cool stuff based simply on taking him at his word. How do you do that? How do you come to believe? Have you ever wrestled with that, what it takes? I have. And what I'm convinced of is it comes down to two simple things. The first is to separate our understanding from believing. Most of us blend these things. We do in a communication too. We kind of think sometimes that if you understand me, you'd agree with me. And have you ever had that? The person keeps talking and talking like, if you just understood, you'd believe. You obviously don't understand because I don't buy it. These are separate functions. You understand and you believe. If you can appreciate that, it changes everything. I remember back when I was going through a divorce with parents and, you know, Frank, dysfunction is not a competition, so you win. But I did plenty. I'm going to give that to you, okay? But I did. I'm a sinner. When Jody and I were dating, people found out dating and people come up to her and said, "You're dating Beelzebub? You're dating Fred Lybrand?" Really? Jody said, "Well, he's changed." And they probably went, "Better changed a lot. God better got hold of him." In that moment, in that day when I was wrestling and struggling in my faith and all that was going on, I bought a Bible. The Bible I had was kind of a paraphrase, and I had an intuition that that wasn't really what I needed. And I started reading the Bible, and I read the Bible, I kid you not, 4 to 6 hours a day for about 6 months. You know, my motto in life is when I obsess, I succeed. You know, that's just me. So asking Jody 116 times, I probably had 317 more. "Will you marry me? Will you marry me? Will you marry me? Marry me. Marry me? Marry me. Are we there yet? Are we there yet?" I read the Bible and read the Bible, read the Bible. And I finally asked this guy I was starting to get to know as a believer. And I said, his name was Goleman or Gorman, but in the South, it's Goleman. And I said, "Gorman, what does this mean that Jesus died for me? I keep running across this. I don't get it. I don't understand it. If I don't understand it, what are my odds of believing it? You ever thought about that?" That's the point. He said, "You know what it means." I said, "I do." He said, "Yeah, tell me." And what I remember saying was, like the spirit of Porky the Pig had come over me, you know? And he looked at me and said, "Exactly, that was so well put." Little girl with a blood disease, very serious one, in the process of seeking treatments and getting to a place of chemotherapies and whatever, needed a blood transfusion. The best candidate was her brother, her little brother, who had a match with a rare blood type issue. And the doctor said, well, so what, son, are you willing to give your blood to your sister? And he kind of looked at him and went, yes, sir. Took him in there, needles, blood, draining. A little bit, the little boy looked up the doctor and he said, when do I die? Thought he was giving his life, his blood to his sister. I'm sitting there one day in my apartment and it dawns on me, oh, I should have been on that cross. I should have been on it. But Jesus said, no, let me go for you. He took my place. I suddenly understood. And I think genuinely in that moment, I bought it. I believed. If you want more faith, I promise you it's going to start with you understanding more. You can't believe what you don't understand. You know, this gospel is that he died for us, was buried, and raised again. That's it. And he says, I'm the answer to your eternal sin problem. If you believe in me, I'll take care of it forever and ever and ever. So you separate understanding from believing. It's really not about your criteria. It's about somehow God in his kindness will birth that thing in you as you keep looking, pursuing. The second thing I would say is community. I want to close with this. It's a community of faith that bolsters your faith. I wrote a book a few years ago on dating, marriage, relationships called Glane. And I'm going to give everyone a copy of this. We just had a windfall. My agent found a whole bunch of boxes and they're coming next week. We'll get them next week. Come back. Join us next time when Batman says, yeah, I know. One of the principles in here that we stressed with our kids was that you'll never be like the people you don't hang around. Based on 1 Corinthians 15:33, bad company corrupts good morals. You'll never be like the people you don't hang around. Don't hang around drug dealers, you won't be like them. You don't hang around intelligent people, don't worry, you won't be like them. Don't hang around spiritual, faith-believing people. Don't worry. Very powerful. Very important. You know, in this community, this church, this continuing to grow, blossom, transition, excitement, good, you know, it's a place where you come as you are. You wear Bermuda shorts, bring them. If you want to wear a suit, you'll get ribbed a little bit, but you get over it. I can wear a suit. You can wear what you want to. We take people kind of, you know, you're kind of welcome to bring your problems. You're probably not welcome to keep them because we're all trying to grow here. Thomas, doubting Thomas, was killed around 72 AD, the best we can discern. On the far east side of India as a missionary, killed for his faith. The far side from Jerusalem. Because of that encounter and that moment to say, I believe. Father, as we bow our heads in this moment, and we remember that you so loved the world that you gave your only son, Jesus, God and man. Man, he could die in our place. And as your son, the sacrifice lasts forever. It satisfies an eternal God's judgment. Amazing. You love the world. You gave your son. And you say, whoever believes in him will not perish but have eternal life. I believe. You know, in those skeptics' heart that you've been tugging at, that like even against their own will, they're coming to the point of believe, grace them in this moment to pray very much as I did, Not that the prayer's magic, but I'm praying because I believe you're there. Father, thank you for sending your son, that he, Jesus, died for me, was buried and raised, and that he promised if I believed in him, I'd have eternal life, my sins forgiven. I say thank you as an act of faith that you've received me. Amen.